Hey, everybody. Garrett here. One quick note up front. It was announced on Friday that Phil Mickelson had withdrawn from the 2022 PGA Championship. That was after Andy Johnson and Kevin Van Valkenburg recorded this podcast that you're about to listen to. So that's why they don't mention it and why they talk about Phil as if he's probably going to play. Just wanted to let you know about that. On with the pod.
Today's episode is brought to you by Golf Blueprint. These guys are our favorite golf practice plan providers. Two very, very sharp guys. Kevin Moore is a professor at University of Georgia, and Nico Daros is an aspiring professional golfer who also has his doctorate. So these guys are extremely smart. And the key to playing good golf is practice, but one of the things that they do an awesome job at is creating practice plans for people. You can sign up at golfblueprint.com. They make practicing fun. They have catchy names for their different, you know, kind of programs. And it's being used by high-level amateurs, aspiring pros, and also PGA Tour players who are using their plans to help them practice better. So you can go to golfblueprint.com and sign up and try it out. Thank you to them for their support of the Fried Egg.
I miss a green, for example. I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
Fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast, and welcome to almost PGA Week. We're releasing this on Sunday before the PGA Championship. Wanted to get something out there for everybody that wanted to kind of get in the PGA mood early. I did our traditional five things about the PGA Championship with none other than ESPN.com's Kevin Van Valkenburg. Kevin has covers a lot of different beats. He writes a lot about the NFL, wrote a ton for ESPN magazine, also has covered golf for a number of years. He's back after a little bit of hiatus. He will be on site at the PGA Championship. You can find his work at ESPN.com, and you can also follow him on Twitter at Kevin Van Valkenburg. So without further ado, here is our preview on the PGA. Exciting, really exciting PGA Championship. All right, we're here, PGA. I guess we're kind of here. This is recording Thursday morning. Golf shots are just being hit at the Byron Nelson, but I got Kevin Van Valkenburg on here to talk about next week's PGA, do kind of a big picture preview. Each of us have come up with five things that we're watching for next week, five big storylines. Kevin, how excited are you to be on site and back on the golf beat for ESPN?
Oh my gosh, what a journey through the wilderness it's been. No, big picture, you got to bring in a big gun like me, a big guy, physically big guy.
Bring in ESPN credentials when we need big picture, we bring in the big guns. I mean, this major is shaping up to be quite a delightful bevy of storylines.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. I've never been to Tulsa. I have been to Oklahoma City once. I haven't seen Kyle Porter in a couple years, so excited to see him. The Bunky Perkins down there in the great state of Tulsa. A couple people that I've met through various golf journeys and travels. The beautiful state of Oklahoma, gonna welcome us all in. And I haven't covered a major for ESPN since 2019, since Brooks won at Bethpage. Did a stint on the ESPN investigative team, and obviously covered a lot of NFL stuff. So excited to be back and on site.
Brooks's last major.
That's right. Yeah, Brooks is one of my things to watch on this thing. Who knows? He saw he withdrew from the Nelson today. So who knows if he'll even show.
That's yeah, I think that's I mean, it's a fascinating place to start is Brooks.
Brooks, I'm not sure how much you know this, but Brooks has only finished outside the top 15 at the PGA in his career twice in like 10 starts. He has been legitimately one of the best PGA Championship players of the last 25 years. Like you can pretty much, if he's healthy, auto lock him in for like a top 10, because he just this the perfect kind of style of golf for Brooks.
Right. It's you know, I was thinking about this and I almost made it one of my storylines, but I it was actually the first thought when I woke up out of bed this morning to show how demented my brain is. Is that I was thinking how delightful it is that we're going to Southern Hills. There's no fairway narrowing going because of like some like there's not an organization that's saying, hey, we don't care about par, but all of our actions point to us caring about score to par, like that they just let a golf course be what it is. And they don't get like extraordinarily punitive. Obviously, like Bethpage was punitive in the rough, but like that's kind of the nature of that golf course is it's narrow fairways and thick rough, like, and you have to deal with it. Like, you know, it should be the fairway should be wider, but the golf course in its state every day of the week is that way. You know, they aren't going to make wholesale architecture changes, but like they go to these golf courses and they kind of just let the golf course be the golf course. And at Southern Hills this week, we're going to see like a little bit wider. It's going to be more like an Augusta National type setup. You know, the Bermuda rough, I think is going to be, I talked to Russ Myers yesterday, 2.5 inches, you know, nothing crazy. And I think that's kind of a testament to Brooks at PGA's is like when the golf course is just set up to be hard, but not, you know, rinky dink.
Super, yeah. Mm-hmm. Not like random, like you need luck and stuff to get to be successful, right? Like what I always think is if the golf course is hard but fair, then Brooks is a great pick because like I think we've said this before when we talked about like what made him, you know, good in a lot of like at Shinnecock and at you know at Bethpage and at the one in St. Louis, which is Belrive. Like he hits it into the rough. Like he's one of 20 guys who can basically just play that like a normal shot, like can just rip a 7-iron into the middle of the green. Whereas a lot of guys, like it's either they get a good lie and they can do that, or they get a bad lie and they got to chunk it forward and just sort of guess. He's just one of the few guys with enough club head speed at the bottom of the swing to be able to do that. And so that's why he's always a good sort of pick in these things and in US Opens and this. So
not to mention, I mean, when you look at his game and when he's rolling, what's his weakness? You know?
Yeah, his putter is a part of it, and injuries, I guess.
Injuries are really the only thing. I mean, I think like he's just a sensational all around player. And when you think about major championships and who tends to play well regularly at major championships is it's people without clear weaknesses, right?
I just think too, he's super disciplined when he's like rarely ever was like, oh, I got to go at this pin or he makes a very stupid, he doesn't ever make a really stupid choice. He's like the anti-Phil in that regard. Like when Phil was younger in his 30s, like when Phil was Brooks's age, he'd basically go at every single pin. He would, you know, try to kill every single drive. He would try to hole every single chip. And Brooks is just always super smart about, you know what? Like, I can make a 20-footer here. Like, there's no reason to sort of press right now in this moment. And so that's why, you know, the way that he just basically, like, made everyone fall away at Shinnecock, I think is, like, was surgical in that sort of respect. Like, you know, he wasn't playing lights out golf there. There was other guys who played better stretches of golf at Chinny than he did, but he was the guy who just had the discipline to be like, yep, just going to hit it to the middle of the green and I'm not going to shortside myself here. And I think he, in that round, like one time hit it in a bad spot and was able to make a bogey, but just accepted like, yep, got to make a bogey here, and made like a 25-footer.
Yeah, Brooks. So are you worried at all about his the curse that he put on himself at the 2020 PGA when he just decided to demean 30 or 20 people on the leaderboard, one of whom won the tournament and is off to one of the best professional starts we've ever seen.
Yeah.
One of whom now is the number one player of the world that was on that leaderboard. Another was Dustin Johnson, who is arguably this generation's best player. You know, when he went guns a-blazing, it's kind of been a different story for Brooks in the final rounds.
My favorite thing about that is like when people were like, wow, like, can't believe you like slagged your best friend in that. And he was like, I don't know, we're not even like that close. Like, you guys made that. It's a media creation. And then like there's clips out there of like, they'd be like, you know, who's your best friend on tour? Oh, Dustin. We just get along so well. Like, he's my guy. So it's like Brooks like rewrites history like he's George Orwell. He'll basically like erase things and pretend, you know, we've always been at war with Eurasia.
Now, having, you know, with The Last Dance pretty fresh in my mind.
Yeah.
Isn't that a little bit of a characteristic that Michael Jordan had, where, you know, the famous Washington Bullets story with, I forgot the guy's name, who scored 40 or 50 on him. And they had back-to-back games, and he insists that he said something to him after the game. And the guy, I think his name's Bradford something.
Yeah.
He, you know, to this day, he's like, I didn't say anything to Michael Jordan. doesn't Brooks have a little bit of that quality of where he just like kind of has a selective memory of what he remembers and doesn't?
Yep. 100%. So I mean, he's a weirdo though in that sense too, of like, he's big time, like, you know, well, the media just created that, you know, when he's like the huge driver of a lot of it. I guess his hip was sort of a little bit sore going into Augusta. I actually thought that I kind of looked like a dumbass because I tweeted a bunch of like, oh, Brooks is ready. We're sleeping on Brooks.
Brooks.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he I don't know if you saw, like, he got in a little bit of a pissing match with a fan at Phoenix right before. And so I was like, oh, Brooks is in a great headspace to just dominate Augusta. It's always been a good course for him. And then, you know, he missed the cut. So I felt like, Brooks was so good last year at majors. Like, other than when he was limping around playing at Augusta when he really probably shouldn't have been playing. You know, he finished again, like top five in three of them. So I think that's the Brooks that I want to see, the guy who's just like always kind of in the mix. And I think it'd be a good, I don't know a ton about the redesign. I didn't do enough homework here and watch the Friday drone footage and stuff of the Southern Hills. So I can't really say how great the layout is for him, but
I think it's going to favor somebody that's good at a lot of things, you know. So I think Brooks, as somebody that covers other sports for a living as well as golf, I have to ask, wouldn't it be nice to know why Brooks Koepka WD'd this week? Like, if you were maybe, you know, embracing gambling as an avenue, wouldn't it be nice to know is this an injury? Is this why isn't he there?
Would be think that if you're embracing gambling, that maybe you should have to kind of disclose this kind of stuff. If only there was a collective bargaining agreement or something between these independent contractors.
Yeah, well, you know, that's I think the thrill of winning, cashing like a, you know, 40-1 ticket is what gives gambling, you know, the draw of gambling to golf. I don't want to get into devolve into a gambling conversation here.
No, definitely not.
My next one, speaking of all around talents, somebody that has certainly burst on the scene the last few months, but anybody paying attention would have seen something, probably not this coming, but something very good coming. Scottie Scheffler, the Top Chef.
I want to throw out this. You're the first person I ever heard mention Scottie Scheffler's name, like way back when he was an amateur or when he was on the Korn Ferry Tour. You were like, this guy is going to dominate. He's going to be so good. And I was like, well, how's some guy named Scottie going to dominate? That's just, we haven't had a great Scottie since Scottie Pippen. But clearly you knew your shit.
One of my, I wish I could go back and get the receipts. I think on the old website, we transferred over and we didn't like, we didn't move all all the stories over, and I wrote something at an NCAA about a little blurb about Scottie Scheffler, but it's lost to the interwebs, and I can't go get my receipts from 2017, unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, he's making his first start is this Byron Nelson, first individual. No offense to Ryan Palmer in the Zurich, but first time we've really seen him since the Masters will be this week at Byron Nelson. So he'll come in either winning five of his last seven or four of his last seven starts. Obviously, that type of run is Jason Day territory right now. And I think one of the things that I have in my head is this a hot run? Or is this the without a doubt best player in golf? Because that's kind of the territory we're at with this run, right? It could go either way. He could slide back, and the more likely scenario is he slides back and he's one of the top five players in golf, and it becomes part of the cycle that we've been in effectively since Tiger Woods, where this guy might be the flavor of the month for flavor of the half year. And this guy might be. And that's kind of, we've been trading these spaces. But, there's a lot to like about Scheffler here is that I think a lot of the skills that are transferable at Augusta, or a lot of the skills that are relevant at Augusta National are going to be relevant this week. You've got, pretty wide fairways. You've got approach shots are going to be important. And if you miss the green, you want a good short game. Scottie Scheffler is good at everything. He has said that Southern Hills is one of his favorite golf courses. He won the 2015 Big 12 Championships at Southern Hills. He was, that was before the redesign. But, it like Brooks, he's good at everything. There's no discernible weakness. And when you're that way, it makes sense that he's played extraordinarily well at major championships. You go look at his major championships, it's, T4 at the PGA in 2020, but then he's the last four majors, he has a win and three top eights with the win. So four times he hasn't finished worse than eighth in a major in the last four starts. So Scheffler, I think the big question is he the clear cut best player in golf, or is this a hot run?
Well, could be both. I was on the golf beat during that sort of Rory Spieth 14-15 run when it felt like either one of them in their sort of their respective heater could win every single major that they were in. And they were both at the moment of those, certainly Rory in 14 and Jordan in 15, the best player in the world in that stretch. And apologies to Jason Day, but
I think you're just you're crushing Jason Day. I feel like he should be included in that stretch. He was at the back. He was the back end of the stretch.
He was the back end of the stretch. Maybe I was just so enamored with Spieth at that moment, just a huge crush on.
Day only got one major.
Right.
The other guys, Rory got two in 2014. Spieth got two. In that period.
15, yeah. And it was really competitive in the other two. Like if Jason Day doesn't exist,
he's got three.
Yeah, he's got three, or if he doesn't hit one bad shot at a bad moment at St. Andrews, he probably gets in that playoff too. What I think too, so my point, I guess, is being when you're on one of these heaters, you just got to kind of ride it as long as you can, right? Because there's no guarantees. Speaking of wishing that receipts could be returned, there's some receipts out there that I wish I could delete from the internet. ESPN's not quite like the old fried egg Tumblr archives, but it's still up there where I'm talking about how Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth are going to duel it out for six and seven majors, be the the Tom Watson of their generation. And I think that was a bit naive in terms of history, because you think when you're in the middle of one of these runs, you just think oh, this is the kind of the new normal. This person's never gonna come down off the cedar. They're the best player in the world. I mean, part of, I think the reason that I ended up getting on the golf beat is that I pitched a story at the end of 14 and be like, is Rory is sort of carrying the torch for the, he's the new Tiger. And everybody thought yeah, he's probably not going to win, 18, but he could win 10. and, you know, he's still at four. Because at that moment, it seemed like Rory was, you know, the next great player, like one of the next five best players to ever live. And so I don't know if that's true of Scheffler. Like, I think, you know, that he could, you know, you could tell me that he could win three majors in his career, and I'd be like, yeah, that sounds like amazing. That's like the high end of what I'd expect. And so, like, if he's still on this heater right now where everything is just seems easy, then yeah, I could totally see him winning at Southern Hills and just, you know, so, but I don't think, like, the thing where I think it feels like it gets a little out of hand is if you start predicting this is going to run forever. Like, it's just great players have these really hot streaks. And in some ways, once those go, they're never quite like as hot as they don't burn quite as bright as they ever did before. And that's been true of DJ. It's been true of Spieth. It's been true of Rory. So
the other interesting thing about this is that these runs, these hot runs, tend in this era to be happening when players are young.
It's true.
And it's almost like they're chasing the fountain of youth. Like, they are, maybe it's some being naive, like major championships and winning golf tournaments is easiest when you don't know any better. And maybe that's the thing, but this dovetails. I'm going to get number two out here because you've hit on this already. Do you know what the numbers 27, 17, and 15, what the relevance of those numbers are?
No, I don't. What are they?
Those are the number of major championship starts for Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, and Justin Thomas since their last major win. And as you kind of laid out, you know, with Rory in 2014, it's like, at that point, he's on this prolific pace. He's, you know, maybe not Tiger, but he's something more than Phil.
The thing that I kind of thought is, like, maybe Rory can be the greatest European player ever. Mm-hmm. Like, he's probably, you know, maybe he doesn't win as many majors as Gary Player. Maybe he doesn't win 10, you know, and obviously, like, you know, Jack and Tiger, you know, sort of dueled out for the greatest American. But, you know, it seemed unthinkable that Rory wouldn't win like 7-8 majors, right? And be potentially like the greatest European player ever. And that just still has never materialized. I think the one thing that I would think about with Scheffler right now is that he doesn't have any like scar tissue, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't have like once he got over the hump, it was like, oh gosh, like I can win. I'm a winner. I've been a winner all my life. Eventually, like, Scottie Scheffler will have like a round where he freaking falls apart because that's golf, right? Or he just completely like has a major where everyone expects him to contend and he just stinks. Like Rory's had plenty of those. And that Rory's talked a lot about how that kind of weighs on you and how all of a sudden you can't, you know, feel as young and free and you don't like, you're overthinking certain, like, oh, I don't want to go with that pin because I don't want to make an error. And that's, I think, that's what dogs Spieth. It's what dogs Rory. It's, you know, I don't think it dogs DJ, but maybe it does, you know. And so those things are probably coming for Scheffler, but not yet, right? Because he just hasn't had them happen. It's just everything feels like it's totally free right now.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing with these guys. Like, I think, you know, these were what appeared to be, as of 4 years ago, the superstars. And at this point, I don't know if you can call any of them. I think ratings wise, like, Spieth and Rory drive numbers, right? Drive interest. And they're superstars from that standpoint. But from their play over the last few years, no. Like, they haven't, you know, they haven't been superstars. And Justin Thomas has won a lot of events, but he hasn't been relevant in major championship golf outside of his one win. And I looked at it, you know, for context, like, I didn't even bother looking at Tiger in this, but once Phil got his major, the longest stretch of, you know, no wins between majors in his prime was 13, and that was before Muirfield. The longest for Ernie was 20 appearances between 97 and 2002. I have to say, I think I'm coming around on Phil being better than Ernie.
Wow! Let the record show.
I still stand by, like, in their peak, I think Ernie was a better player. But career-wise, it's pretty emphatic, especially with my new point system.
Glad you didn't walk into the ocean at Kiowa, because I was just rewatching the Kiowa celebration at the end of the end. I was looking in the background for you, like looking despondent, you know, neck deep in the waves. Poreth calling you back. I don't know. I mean, people forget that, like, Phil really should have won three straight majors, right? You put one ball in the fairway at Wingfoot and all of a sudden he's won three straight majors. Like, if you think about that, like, has at any point Justin Thomas been even in contention in three straight majors? Nope. I guess Spieth almost did it, so he could sort of say that's equal. But, like, I don't know, man. I can't figure out JT. Like, we watch him at the Players and you see, like, I used to sort of think that he was, like, I used to call him, like, a Firestone golfer, right? I used to think, like, he just hit it far, hit it high, not a lot of, like, brains or imagination, just unbelievable. And I think that was he evolved a little bit, but also maybe that was a bad read on my part, because he's such a creative mind in terms of, like, okay, I got to hit this shot with less spin. I got to hit the shot in this trajectory. And that's what we ask. That's what we want from golfers, right? We always kind of complain about, oh, it's just bomb and gouge dumb. And that's not JT. Like, he is super creative and interesting and smart. And he has all of the sort of game. The putter lets him down sometimes, but it's such a bummer because he's one of the few people who is really interesting to watch in adverse conditions and different things. And yet he's been just really bad at the British Open, where all those things should come into play. And he's been pretty bad at Augusta, where, like, creativity should be rewarded. And I wanted to see him when he was leading at Erin Hills after that unbelievable round that tied whatever, or I guess comparative to par, broke Johnny Miller's US Open record. I really thought that he was going to come out and win that. And it was going to be like, all right, finally JT is, like, he's that dude. And he just kind of, like Ricky that day, just kind of went backwards, and Brooks just boat raced everybody. And I've never really felt quite like the same about JT again. I was just like, man, like, that was such an opportunity that you threw away. And those are so hard to get. You know, you're leading a major championship after three rounds, and that you got to go out and take those. And to shoot whatever it was, like 60 or 73 on that day when Brooks shot like 67, was just kind of a nothing burger.
I think that's the alarming thing about JT, is how few opportunity. You're talking about a major, what, 4 years ago?
Yeah.
And really, like, what has there been a great opportunity? Maybe the Masters a year ago, in 2021. You know, he had the, you know, kind of disaster on Saturday, I think, when he found Ray's Creek on the back nine on 13. And,
well, he was leading at Wingfoot after two rounds and wasn't even in the conversation by the end. Like, you know, mm-hmm. it's hard to look, this shit is really hard, but also, like, you got to put those four rounds together. And he has these kind of, like, blockages where he just can't quite figure out how to get it. I mean, even as much as we've teased Rory, Rory's been way more relevant in majors since than JT has, since JT won his.
Now for a quick word from our sponsor, Club Champion. We talked about practice earlier. One of the other ways to get a lot better is to have your equipment fit specifically for yourself. Club Champion is the leader in golf fitting. They are awesome at it. If you go to Club Champion and you get fit, you are in for a great experience. I've been going to Club Champion basically since high school. They started in Chicago, so I'm very familiar with them. They now have 100+ locations internationally. If you go there, they have 50,000 different hittable head and shaft combos. So you're going to go and you're going to get to try everything and you're going to see what's best for you. So if you want to get a equipment fitting, you can book it on their website. If you use the promo code FRIEDEGG, you'll get 20% off your fitting cost with a purchase of a club. Thank you to Club Champion. And now back to Kevin Van Valkenburg. So here's one of my questions. If I add 1.5 to each of their major total with over under, are you going over? So Rory would be 5.5. Jordan Spieth would be 4.5, and JT would be 2.5. Are you going over on any of those totals?
I actually think I would on Spieth, because I think that like Spieth's game will be forever relevant. I think he'll have streaks where he's hot with the putter. I think he'll have streaks where he's, you know, back to being the best iron player in the world. You know, I think he'll always kind of be a little bit erratic with the driver, but I think that Spieth also kind of has like that thing in him where he like, it's just loves golf. And it would not be surprise me to see Spieth win like a British Open in like his 40s, like a little Mira type British Open, or a Phil British Open, or a Darren Clark British Open. Like, he's going to be relevant in that for a long time. Rory just doesn't strike me as someone who wants to kind of stick around and do it forever. I wouldn't be surprised to see Rory basically be like a ceremonial golfer in his 40s. So I think I would take, God, if Rory wins one more major, I could almost see like the Tiger thing of like, well, I did it. I came back and I proved everybody that I could still do it. And now I'm good. Like, I'm, you know, I don't need to win anymore. And yeah, I think I would take the under on the other two. I could see JT and Rory each getting one more major, but I would pick Spieth to win more.
I think I go under on all of them. Mm-hmm. And it leads me into,
it's a smarter bet for sure.
It leads me into like my last thought on these droughts. And it's a question, but I think I fall on one side of it. You know, there's clearly a new crop of young talent on tour. And are they just younger and better?
I mean, are they younger and better, or are they, is the game, I think you've talked about this a lot, is the game still rewarding like speed and power and youth? Like, is it essentially like how the NFL works, where you're maybe, other than playing quarterback, you're at your best when you're 23 to 26, because that's when you're at your physical peak as a football player, right? So I remember once we were talking at ESPN, the magazine, back when we were sort of thinking about interesting story ideas, and we came up with this kind of story pitch that was like, golf breaks everybody eventually. Like, when's it going to break Rory McIlroy? And that was kind of like, you know, like, golf kind of broke Phil's brain in a lot of ways, and he like managed to stitch it back together. But like, golf broke Tiger's brain in some ways. Like, Jack's like one of the few people that it didn't like break. I mean, of all of those eras, like, golf is so hard that it drives everyone a little bit crazy, right? And it just, you, yeah, there's other things that factor into life, that, you know, kids, marriage and finances and all that stuff. But like, golf obviously broke Greg Norman a couple times and is still breaking him in weird ways. And so I think you're right. Like, it doesn't seem like there's not a lot of guys right now in their 30s who are winning their first major. Like, this idea that Ricky's going to like click and figure it out, or, you know, all of a sudden like, oh, this wily veteran sort of now that has figured it all out. I don't know that that's going to happen, man, because there's going to be a lot of like, there's kids right now who are 17 who are going to be way better than Ricky is when they're 23 and he's 35. So what is the guarantee that like this experience is really being helpful in the long run? Like, that's how sports kind of work, is you just kind of like, the youth movement just keeps pushing and pushing and getting better earlier.
Would anything break the golf internet, like in golf, would there be more takes than any player, more so for any player than Ricky going to play LIV?
Oh, man. I mean, imagine how much fewer commercials we'd have to watch. I don't know that Rocket Mortgage is going to be like super excited about this Saudi Arabia little investment fund backed player. I mean, it's certainly like Tiger would be like the. I mean, it would be funny to see if Tiger did it, only because you would see all these people who had been anti live for so long just flip all of a sudden, be like, well, he's an independent contractor, he should be able to do what he wants. Obviously, you know, America's done some bad stuff too.
What do you got on your list? What else you got? Oh. It was a Ricky Live Golf on there?
It was not. That's a great one to have on there. But you know, I guess we haven't even ruled that out. That's still very possible. You know, I guess Brooks is on my list. So tell me what you think about this, being the course expert. Is Southern Hills Spieth's best chance to win the career Grand Slam that's coming up in a while? At PJ venues.
I've said this, I think. I think I said this on the Shotgun Start. All of those blend together, but I do believe that. I think Southern Hills is just, I mean, it's perfect for his game. It's got a lot of Augusta National characteristics in the sense of you're dealing with topography on almost every shot. I mean, the places where Southern Hills is flat, for the most part, there's the second and third hole are flat holes, but you have a creek that winds through them. And then the other flat holes are par threes. So you're dealing with topography. You're rarely hitting that range shot. You're going up. You're hitting from side hills. On almost every shot, you're either going up or down or a side hill. And a lot of them, you're doing both. That's something you see at Augusta National. The greens provide very small targets in the sense of, like, if you're in the right section, you're really good, which is very similar to Augusta National. You have space off the tee, which I think is super important for Spieth.
Yep.
If he has a good week driving the golf ball, he could hit 11 fairways in a round. And I don't think that's the case usually at PGAs or US Opens, just because of the golf courses they go to. And in the US Open case, the way they set up golf courses since Erin Hills. So I think from that sense, and then you've got short grass around the greens, which is really good for great short game players. You know, Spieth can play more aggressively approaching greens, knowing short grass is around him, because he's a magician around the greens, and he can get up and down when he's short-sighted 10 feet below the hole from short grass. Whereas, you know, that long rough, and it keeps balls close, but it becomes a little bit more of the luck of the draw. Did I get a good lie? So I really do like Spieth here. I like it. The other thing it shares with Augusta National that I think is one thing that I've been thinking about a lot is there are a lot of draw tee shots out there. So we've seen certain players like JT really struggle, with some draw holes at Augusta National. Like 13 has been a disaster for Justin Thomas. But Jordan Spieth is a guy that has played well at a course that requires a draw. And who knows what shot shape he actually hits. I think it's, you know.
He might not know at this point whether he's going to play a fade or a draw. So he might be guessing on the downswing, which is going.
But yeah, I think this is a great spot for Spieth. I hope that pre-shot routine's gone. I got a feeling it's not going to be.
It's probably
not. We might
not
know if we were watching the Nelson right now.
Yeah. I just think from just thinking about it and looking at the future venues, you know, it would be a neat thing if he did win the career Grand Slam. Obviously, only four guys have done it. And this might be his best chance in a while, right? Like, he's playing good, but not so good that, like, all the attention is on him. All this pressure is on him. No one's out there, like, writing, like, will Spieth win the, you know, career Grand Slam this week? Like they were, you know, the first time around when he had the shots at it. And, you know, is Oak Hill like a good fit for him? I don't think it's particularly good at all. Aronimic is coming up. That might be a good fit for him in the future. But like Quail and Valhalla, those don't strike me as like particular. Nobody knows what Frisco is going to be like. But he'll be also what by the time like those we got Oak Hill's next year. And then we got Valhalla in 24 and then Quail. And then Aronimic. And by the time we get to Frisco, it's a home game for Spieth.
He might have like three kids by then. He might have too much perspective.
Way too much perspective. So we ought to start an anti-perspective movement. There ought to be like a whole. That might be my first column. It's like you need less perspective at this point.
Well, as somebody with one kid, I do think there is some perspective that one kid provides that you don't. live with before you have a kid.
Yeah.
But I think there's also like a sliding scale of perspective. And I think once you enter, like Brendan for sure with four kids has has way too much perspective. It becomes what it becomes is your life is just filled with problems because that your children are providing, you know, you. And you don't have any time to think about anything but your kids.
Oh man. Yes, I agree 100%.
You know, this is like the Rory scale, right? Mm. When you're single and you have no girlfriend or your girlfriend's a tennis star that's trying to achieve the same thing that you're trying to achieve, which is like superstardom. You're probably your best self because you can go full narcissist.
Yes. For sure.
Right? Like all you have to do is take care of yourself, which is good for golf, right? And then you have like relation, like I think like there's a scale, like it's your life, like, and that's I think one of the really interesting things about golf is that the mental aspect of the sport really plays a role in your on-course performance, and your different life moments have impacts, and people handle parenthood differently, right? And like there's all these factors that are the great unknown, and I think that's what makes the game so fickle.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think I always thought that about Rory, like that his was one of the themes that I was sort of contemplating as I was writing about him for the first time in the beginning of 15 was, you know, eventually like marriage and stuff and kids are going to change his life in ways that he can't like grasp. I remember I talked to Michael Phelps once about this when he was like on his, it was prior to the Beijing Olympics. And I was like, are you, you know, do you ever like date people here at the University of Michigan? And he was like, eh, you know, there's some people here in our lives. And I was like, well, how do you, you know, prioritize like swimming stuff versus, you know, like, hey, this girlfriend, my girlfriend wants to hang out or whatever. And he's like, yeah, I basically just tell him like, you're either like on board with my schedule or you're gone. Like, cause there's no, you know, and the woman he was dating at the time is now his wife. And he laughed when we like talk about that later in life. It's like, yeah, like I didn't have any perspective because all I was doing was like selfishly pursuing what I wanted. And, you know, thankfully, the, you know, Nicole stuck by him all that time and dealt with his kind of, you know, ruthless ambition at that point. But that's so true of golfers. It's like, yeah, you can just grind and be awesome and never have to worry about, you know, anything but yourself. And then all of a sudden that flips.
Well, you know, this leads me into one of my topics. Two of golf's great narcissists who have really revealed, one of whom has really revealed himself in the last year since his historic win, Tiger and Phil, who, you know, I think we talk about how Spieth's flying under the radar. And I have another flying under the radar thing after this. But, you know, why everybody seemingly is flying under the radar is because of Tiger and Phil. Tiger making his second start since that awful injury, you know, self-induced injury. And then Phil, potentially, we don't know if he's playing for sure. Nobody knows if he's playing for sure. But he's in the field, so we're operating that he's playing.
One comment on that real quick. I was thinking about this. Isn't there's a PGA Champions, like Champions Dinner. Right. I know that they like gather like on the Wednesday night or whatever before. I don't think it's like a necessarily quite, it's obviously not like Augusta where you pick the menu and all that stuff. But like, you think that Phil would have to like make the people there aware that he might or might not be coming, that he was going to be the host and what he wanted to sort of do for the dinner. I mean, that you think maybe the people who hold the key, the breaking news to whether Phil is going to play or not, are they like the wait staff or the cooking staff at Southern Hills?
I mean, I had been getting reports about like security is preparing for Phil like a month ago. Like, you know, I think he's playing because, again, this kind of goes back to who he is.
Mm-hmm. He wants that.
All right. Juice. He's the ultimate showman.
Yeah.
And I just can't imagine him skipping the title defense of historically. You know, right there with Tiger's 2019 Masters win is Phil's 2021 PGA win. Completely, like, unbelievable that he won that tournament. I still, like, to this day, when I when I'm preparing for this podcast, I'm like, I can't believe he won last year. I cannot believe that this man won the PGA last year.
It would be so sweet if Phil came this week, and I don't know, you know, he's never been your guy, but like with a full, like, big gray beard, 15 extra pounds, wearing those aviators, hair kind of like long, you know, maybe in a ponytail, walked into that presser and was like, "What you got? Hit me. I'm ready to answer it all." And just was like, "Yeah, don't care. Went for the money. Next." Like, if Phil should just be in full, like, doesn't give a F, the next sort of stage, that would be the way immediately he would be won back by a lot of people if he was like, but, you know, he'll probably do some contrition and some, like, you know, I don't know. I would like to see Phil just go kind of full trollish, but he, you know, knowing him, he'd step in it somehow. He'd say something dumber, and it would just be rebooted all over again.
Do you think he's playing?
I do, yeah. I think he should have played the Byron Nelson this week.
Well, he might not have been able to.
That's true. He should have tried in a Z, like, if they would let him. But then he wouldn't have. That's probably a good indication that why he didn't. Because if he could have played ahead of time.
He always plays ahead
of time. Yeah, it would have just given him. It would have dealt, like, it would have got all this stuff out of the way. And then he could have said at Southern Hills, like, "Hey, I answered that last week, but I really appreciate the question. Like, I'm just here to talk about the golf now. I already talked about that stuff at the Byron Nelson."
The thing about it is that it's been a really hard period of time with him in terms of PR. And I'm not saying that it shouldn't have been. I think in a way, him deciding to remove himself from everything has actually made it worse. It's made it really easy for people to pile up. It's made some of his, like, his real believers a bit skeptical about what all is going on. And I think being out in the public and just being himself, is crazy. Like, because at the end of the day, like, he's one of the greatest players of all time. He's coming off one of the greatest wins of all time, and sports, like, there's the sports politics crowd. Like, there's, you know, people just want to like sports and have it be a departure. And I think Phil is one of the people in golf that offers the best departure in a way, right? Like, no matter what you feel about the guy, the things that, like, I've never been a fan, but, like, there are just, he provides these moments on the golf course in competition where you just, like, laugh out loud. You're like, what is he doing? Why, you know? And when you take away all of the extracurriculars, and, you know, and I think people have largely done this with Tiger Woods and been able to, like, move on. When you take away all of that, like, he is one of the great showmen. He's one of the, you know, true spectacles. And when we talk about all these other, what we've talked about all these other players, all everybody else we've talked about in this kind of discussion, we all are just hoping for one of them to be something like a shell of what Tiger and Phil have provided us for three decades.
I mean, love or hate Phil, he's made it interesting to watch. Like, even with all of his various fuck ups and all of his, like, you know, I always thought that the best way to sort of kind of describe the way a lot of his personality is that he just gets bored with, like, the status quo. And so he has to create kind of chaos to see if he can wiggle his way out of it. And, you know, he needed constantly to, like, I think he has, like, such a, maybe a short attention span is the right way to put it, but doesn't quite grasp it. So it's like, oh, like, this year I'm going to play true drivers. This year I'm going to play four wedges. This year I'm super into stats. This year I'm super into fitness. This year I'm a family man. This year, you know, I'm working with Butch Harmon. No, this year I'm not having a coach. Like, this year I'm using a Frankenwood. I'm not going to hit any drivers off the tee. It's like Tiger was a person who was like, I wanted everything to be the same. I needed to sort of, you know, just be super disciplined. And Phil was like, yeah, man, how can I think about, like, ways to keep myself interested in this, because it just, otherwise I'll bored to death. And so maybe this is the ultimate like created chaos to see if I can wiggle out of it. It's like whether you're a magician or whether you're a gambler, the same kind of principles apply of like, hey, watch me see if I can get out of this mess. And this is the ultimate kind of call on that. This is, can the dude get out of it or can he win people back?
It's going to be riveting. I think he's going to play too. I just, the whole thing, the whole last 12 months is just absolutely bonkers. How a man can go from the very top of the sport, like the toast of all of sports. And for a man to go from that to really like the cellar of the sport, like just like the punching bag of the sport within a calendar year is unbelievable.
I always, when I think about your Phil antagonism in the last year or so, I think about that thing in the internet that's like, oh, they had us in the first half there. It was, you know, you had a dark moment at Kiowa. Phil had sort of dunked in your face and ultimately, like, you came out okay in the end. Phil managed to, like, if you look at the last year, the long descent of weirdness into him. Remember, you know, when he was like fighting with the Detroit News guy about that investigative story, yes, and like all his ridiculousness around the PIP and like fighting with various, you know, bitching at the USGA about the driver length. Like it's sort of been a slow descent of weirdness and of like, you know, the obviously the media rights stuff. I, you know, I still think some knucklehead tech bro got in his head after a round at, you know, in Phoenix or something about, oh, you know, they're ripping you off, Phil. There's 20 billion.
Maybe it was at the Fortnite.
Could have been.
When he was up with the tech bros.
It could have been. And that just convinced him of something that wasn't true. At like so many of super rich people who don't consume like actual legitimate news and they get their news from like sitting around a table post round with the people. And, you know, he just is further descended into sort of a Howard Hughes weirdness now, like believing things that are just, you know, fit his biases.
And you know, we barely have talked about Tiger, but I don't think there needs to be that much said. Do you have any expectations of Tiger contending in this tournament?
Contending, no. But I think, you know, he could, was hopefully, I guess my hope would be is that we'll see him looking a little bit stronger towards the end of the tournament if he makes a cut, right? Is that he was limping super hard at the end of that Augusta run, so it was kind of hard to watch. But you know what, he was what, 4 shots off the lead after 2 rounds? Like, obviously
4 shots out of second, which is I think relevant because we had a runaway winner. Mm-hmm. You know,
he still knows how to think his way around a golf course and still knows how to hit his irons in spots where it's not going to make doubles, and so I think, you know, would it be super compelling? Obviously, he was in the mix. Absolutely. Like, should anyone expect that at all? Like, I don't think so. Like, I still think maybe St. Andrews is a much better chance if that's ever going to happen again. And it's probably his last realistic chance at St. Andrews. Like, he'll be 55 the next time it comes around. So that's, you know, unlikely. So he has to sort of hopefully be geared towards that as like his thing. So
I'm going to make the case that this is, everybody's been saying that St. Andrews is his best chance. I'm going to make the case that this is his best chance this year. Here's why. It's going to be warm. If the weather holds, the weather right now is showing dry, warm, with some wind. Like, that's the other thing. If the weather forecast, and this is Thursday, like, this could change. The weather forecast is showing a dry week with 15-mile-an-hour winds at a golf course that's got similarities to Augusta National. Yeah. And when you start to think about it that way, you've got a shot maker. You've got a guy that's great around the greens with all the shots around the greens. Like, if the turf is firm and it's warm, that back is going to work better. And the golf course really lends itself well to Tiger. I actually would make the argument that this is a better chance than St. Andrews, where it's probably going to be cold and windy. And we've seen along like the last few years, when it's cold and windy, Tiger doesn't have a good chance, you know? So I'd say this could be like where he's, you know, ripping off undershirts because he's sweating through them like at Potomac a few years ago, where he's, you know, he's going through 7 shirts because it's hot and humid, and but he's swinging well. And I like that. I think that that's where I'm landing. Like, would I be surprised if he misses the cut? No, the guy's barely played any competitive golf. But would I be surprised if he's in the mix? Absolutely not. This is a place that would fit his game. He was the last guy to win here in a major championship too. So I don't think you can rule him out of being somewhat of a factor on the weekend. And I share your sentiment. Like, what I do want, I just want him to not look like so uncomfortable on the weekend.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing. And I actually kind of, I'm on board with your Southern Hills versus St. Andrews take. I think also St. Andrews is wide open enough too, where like, if a bunch of guys could play really well, it's not like he's the only guy with experience at St. Andrews. And so he'd have to outplay some guys too. Whereas, you know, this is a totally new like redesign. No one knows how this is going to play in major championship sort of case. And he has always been really good at, you know, being the best player at a course where no one has ever sort of seen it play in the majors before. So I subscribe to your take there.
What else you got on your list? We're just, you know, soaking up time here. I think I'm through three. I don't know how many you're through. Have some of them been unloaded with other topics that we've talked about?
I want to see old Stu Sink get a little redemption, Southern Hills. Imagine as we're talking about real obscure takes here. Yeah, like Stu Sink, all of a sudden, the fact that Stu Sink is still relevant, I want to see Stu Sink have a little bit of a redemptive moment. He's still playing good golf. That's why I want to sort of see it here.
Stu Sink, the resurgence is just, I really wish he had held on to a little bit better of a last year, and he would have been in the mix for a Ryder Cup pick. That would have been just like delightful if Stricker had like the hard decision between Scheffler and Sink and had gone Sink or something.
In another era, they would have put Stu Sink on that team because like as veteran experience, right? When they used to throw those, who was the 50-year-old pick that they picked one year with a captain's pick? Was it Jay Haas?
I can't remember. Jay Haas.
Like 2006 was like some slim pickings for the U.S. Ryder Cup team, I gotta say.
Here's one of my takes here is I think it's crazy how under the radar two players, and I really prepared this around one, but as I was preparing around one, I found myself with two. Like, I think that it's the Tiger, Phil, and Scheffler buzz, and I think Spieth is almost like number four in the storylines, and somehow the two best young players in the game, and over like if you take Scheffler in a vacuum of like this is a 7 week run or 7 start run, really like a half a year, the two best young players in the game, Colin Morikawa and John Rahm, are just like they're in a position they shouldn't be in as the two best young players of the game, in the sense that they're like storyline like F is Colin Morikawa and John Rahm. I mean, Morikawa's got 6 wins in his first 70 starts as a pro. He's got 2 major championships. He's been incredible at major championships. And here's a golf course that is going to require extraordinary precision approaching the greens. Like, this is a guy that should be just like, this should be one of the leading stories of the event. And it almost didn't make my list. And, you know, I just think that is, it's crazy. And the same goes for Rahm. And it's like both these guys, you know, if either of these guys win this week, we're talking about like Morikawa with 3. Rahm, if he wins, is like, you know, is back to like, is he the best player in the world without a doubt? Like in both of them, they're the two players that right now, based off of the trajectory they're on, have a chance at being a Phil-like star in the game of golf. You know, obviously they aren't going to have the off course, but on course, they could truly be better than the Rory, the you know, and this is kind of like the ilk we're talking about, but both of them, their consistency is mind-boggling and something we really haven't seen.
I think Morikawa's ascent is like, he's probably like one of the most underrated studs in all of sports, right? Like people just don't really quite believe that it's real. Maybe just as he doesn't do it in sort of this overpowering dominant way. Like he's so good at the the precision thing, like hitting your irons like just consistently brilliantly. And that's somehow like not of a like a much of a macho thing. It doesn't hit it, you know, 350 or whatever. It's just I find myself kind of like, you're right. Like if Colin Morikawa won a major this week, no one would be surprised, and he would have as many majors as Spieth, and that would be completely like mind-boggling in terms of the way that they've been covered in the last few years, right? I guarantee that like if you do that thing where you punch in like someone's, you know, name into Google, how many stories or how many hits have they been, like Spieth would dwarf Colin Morikawa. And so I don't know, is it like, is there a racial element to it at all? Like why is Colin Morikawa not thought of as like more awesome and more dominant? I don't know.
I don't think he's as exciting of an interview.
He's pretty boring. Spieth, yeah, he's very bland.
Like I think Spieth is very real. He'll tell you what he's thinking. Morikawa to me feels like he's telling you what his agent wants him to say. And I love Colin Morikawa. I've been a huge fan of Colin Morikawa for a long time, but you get the feeling of like immense commercialization from the second he turned pro, and very rarely do you ever feel like, I don't, this is just my personal opinion, I just don't feel like we're ever actually hearing what he truly thinks about a subject, unless he's talking like in nitty gritty about golf.
And some of that might, you know, he was a business, I can't remember what part of business major he was at Cal, but like he effectively really probably knows how to manage his brand with like zero risk. And that is just basically like just sticking to golf and not really having any kind of other interests kind of, you know, trickle into this stuff. He's not uber famous in the way that like a lot of the other guys are, right? Like I bet he could walk around a lot of streets in America and not be recognized. My final thing on the five things, I think there should be like the PGA of America should have way more like focus and attention, not necessarily during the broadcast, but about who's going to finish as the low professional, the teaching professional. I think that, you know, obviously there's some of that always or whatever, but there should be like big wagers on it. There should be like, you know, stories about every guy. We should spotlight, we should be gambling all the time on it. I would like, that would be fun.
I think the other thing is that there should be like a real count of how much time was spent on either the lesson tee or in the pro shop for these guys, because I think there's a lot of different levels, a lot of different profiles of these guys.
Absolutely.
Like there are some of these guys that all they do is play golf. They're effectively professional golfers that are PGA pros. And then there's some guys that are legitimate teachers. I would like to know more, honestly. This is the key. Honest.
Okay.
You know, Ben Cook last year masquerading around was one of the most fraudulent. It's like this guy hasn't spent, he's played 10 Latin America tour events in the spring. When's he been at his pro shop in Michigan that he allegedly is a pro at?
Poor Ben Cook gets savaged by you on like all different mediums. I wonder, like, if his family's listening out here, get in, well, Andy's mentions.
What is he? Like, is he a Latin American PGA Tour player? Or like a Latin American Tour player,
it's a
or
great
a PGA
point.
Pro? You can't
it's
be
a great
bold.
Point. He's the, you know, this is the Omar Uresti of the next the lower down teaching pro. You ought to be able to have to like have testimonials of like how many lessons have you given?
Lessons or how many shirts have you folded? Like what's your merchandise? Like how well do you know your Beach Ratty rep?
That's a great
you
point.
Know how well do you know your Grayson rep? Like do these people know who you are?
Can you get a shipment of Precision Pros quickly from like, you know, do you have the guy's number in your phone? You don't have to look it up in the system. It's in your
yes.
phone. See how exciting this could be if the broadcast had a little bit of creativity. Just do the legwork.
It's the same thing that makes the Mize Bryson annual duel at Augusta so enticing. Is that Larry Mize's life compared to Bryson DeChambeau's is so different? They play the game so differently, and yet at Augusta National every year they seem to be just locked in a tussle for T42.
Who, if every like top 10 player, top 20 player had to be paired with a TGA, a PGA teaching professional, an actual teacher in the first two rounds, who would be more like annoyed by that development? The actual PGA Tour pros or the PGA teaching pros?
So I think the tour pros would be annoyed. I think the more you know, right descriptor for the PGA pros would be like more shook, like it's completely out of their comfort zone. You know, like imagine a PGA pro playing with Tiger and having to deal with the Tiger
crowd. Well, yeah, conditions are really, really tough out there, Ben. What do you
like a first, and they always put a first time PGA, like first time playing the PGA championship.
Welcome to the cauldron, man. Like, let's go. You have the tea.
I thought, you know, like the one time I played the Mid-Am, I thought it was absurd. They gave me the last tea time the first day. And it's like, oh, for fuck's sake, I got to sit around and think about this until 2:15 today. But all right, my last, I love that take. Storyline to watch is the Liv undertones.
This could be the last dance of some people.
Yeah.
Say goodbye to Sergio and to Westy and all the boys.
Well, I think there's a lot of names that we don't know.
Ricky could be on that list for all we know. Like Rick could be like, well, I'm gonna redeem my career over on the Liv tour.
I think the other thing about this is last year it was kind of swirling around. If you remember early in the week, there were meetings. Seth Waugh made a really strong comment last year about Liv in Saudi Arabia, about how they'd be banned from Ryder Cup and from PGAs. Since then, I feel like it hasn't been murmured again. I feel like there's been a walk back in a sense of silence. The Masters, I don't think Ridley's comments were at all like throwing support behind the tour. I don't think the USGA hasn't said anything about it, and I don't think they will. I think these major championships are kind of just like sitting back and waiting to see what happens and saying, you know, we're Switzerland right now. And I think this is the last kind of time, I think, where the golf is going to be really normal in the sense of like, this is where everybody plays. And after this week, that Liv list is going to come out. Who knows? It might leak and come out this week. But I think there's going to be a lot of names on that list that people didn't expect. I think something that hasn't been talked about enough is that I think it's going to be a heavy international list.
Yeah.
I think when you think about Saudi Arabia, money is not, I don't think, as reprehensible to Europe and Asia as it is to America, because they're closer to it. They have more of it in their daily lives. And I think what you're going to see is what if the tour becomes, what if a lot of the international players are gone from the tour? You know, what if, and this is just a speculation. There is no, what if a player like Hideki left? And I'm not saying he's going to, but what, you know, like what happens to the tour? Like that's someone they can't afford to lose. They can't afford to lose Japan's biggest star, because are they actually a global tour if they lose a lot of the international base?
You know what I think? I was thinking about this. Remember back when we were kids, we're essentially like Europeans played on the European tour, right? They would come to the majors and they would maybe come. It was like a big deal when like Seve would come and play like a normal event in the United States. We might be returning to a time where, and this would, you would, the Liv stuff would have to kind of not play at like Trump Bedminster and Pumpkin Ridge and like that shitty course outside of Chicago. Like they'd have to, if this deal was like, okay, these events are going to be played all over the Middle East and Europe and Australia and whatever, and that's where you have to play. Honestly, it would be kind of interesting in some ways, right? Because it's kind of like the divide between the American League and the National League back when they, before interleague play, it was like, oh, you know, we get to see them together in the majors. And it's like, it's sort of interesting that it was like that's where I could maybe be like, well, maybe this would be the one time, if they're still all allowed to play in the majors, be kind of fun to sort of have them mix it up there. Cause then you could have debates and discussions of like, does this Liv win mean anything to anybody, whatever. It'll be weird to me, though, if they're just like literally playing tournaments within the United States. That's where I don't know if it, like, LIV ought to basically trying to be focused on, we're just going to be the global tour, right? The PGA Tour is really global in name only, right? Because what, they have tournament in Canada, tournament in Mexico. Like, it's not like they're going to play tournaments in Australia or tournaments, you know, around the world that much. Like, the WGCs are some of that, but I don't know. I mean, I think that you're right. Like, it is sort of represented. It could be kind of a reversal and going back to like what it was when we were kids, when you just didn't see as much of the sort of, you know, how often was Ian Woosnam playing in the United States other than the Masters, right? He was just like, I love that Bamberger book To the Links Land, where the European Tour was the European Tour. And like,
Sneaky, that book might be the best comprehensive golf book ever written, because it no other book covers like professional golf and travel in such a seamless, like, the gracefulness of how it just goes from one topic to the next is unbelievable.
Bamberger is just, he's awesome. You know, he's certainly someone I've admired for a long, long time. And you're right. Like, he had enough credibility as like a legitimate caddy and also as like a truly great writer to sort of blend the two. And like, there's, you know, they would take like a freaking bus from like, you know, down to Portugal for the Portugal Open, you know, and like, there's scenes where the bus would get pulled over and like the police are interrogating them. And that, you know, it's like, nobody knows like what the outcomes be. It's not super easy to get a hold of these days. I don't know if it's out of print, but you can find it.
I remember DJ and I talked about it on a pod. DJ Pi and I talked about it on a pod. And then the next time I looked on Amazon, it was like an $80 book to buy used.
Well, we're just driving things, driving up the cost right here one more time.
Well, that's what happens whenever an old book gets brought up on if No Laying Up does an old book for one of their reading the book pods. It's all of a sudden you can't afford to buy it. You need to know. You need to be out ahead of the podcast release schedule on old books, not new books. Please don't reach out to me about interviewing you for your new book.
Andy, I'm sad I won't see you at Southern Hills this week or next week. I would love to have, you know, it's been a while since I got to see you as well. So other than through the screen.
Well, maybe Open?
I'm hopeful. We'll see. No, yet.
U.S. Open?
I think so. We'll see.
We'll be there.
Lord knows I'll swing by the Bixby house then to eat some chips.
Precision Pro House. All right. Hey, great chat. Look forward to next time and have a great week at the PGA.
Tuba.
Thank you for listening to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. This episode was edited by the wonderful Meg Atkins. Thank you, Meg. It is major championship week. That means we are going all out in terms of content. We've got a ton of articles already up on the site. We will have many more. Meg, along with Garrett Morrison, will be on site. So we will have on-site reporting from the PGA Championship. It should be an awesome week. The easiest way to stay up to date on these major championship weeks, know what's going on, see all of our content, but just having, you know, good grip of what's going on in the major, is to sign up for the Fried Egg newsletter. If you go to the website, it's right there, thefriedegg.com. Sign up for free and you will not miss a beat with the major. And then most importantly, you'll be a better golf fan the rest of the week. Go visit the website. There's lots of new stuff. There will be probably multiple things up every day. And thank you for listening, and let's have a great PGA week.